You're good. All right. Well, it is exciting to be here. You good? You good? We're at the lake, man. That's fun. And so, what a glorious place to meet and to praise God and talk about His Word. And it's just extremely appropriate for us to be in this section of Scripture, and I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek, that we're in. We are in the book of Exodus. And so though we don't have the slideshow going up there, we are continuing our examination of the book of Exodus. And we are not separating the Bible reading from the message today because we're going through a chapter and a half. And so we're going to do our Bible reading. Yes, I know. You think, no way. Watch. 15 minutes later, we're going to be done. Okay, so I'm a false prophet too. Anyways, yeah, no way. But anyways, that is why we're going to do all this together. This is getting into some of the most exciting portions of Scripture. I know that you have been anxiously awaiting this moment for us to talk about slavery and selling your daughters off as slaves and you know, how much you can get out of it. I know I have, and so to find out what my biblical framework is for how much I can get. If you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and sit. That's right. That's right. No. Biblically, you're still under my auspice. I can get more for you now because you know all that extra training. That's right. So anyway, seriously though, we are in Exodus chapter 21, and we've gone through the deliverance of Israel coming out of Egypt, seeing the mighty hand of God. We've just recently spent the last 5 weeks looking at the Ten Commandments, the 10 words of the covenant. And again, as a quick reminder of that, you know, the 10 words of the covenant, I refer to that all the time because that is the framework of God's covenant with Israel. You know, those were things that God expected His children Israel to do as their part, their end of the covenant. And so what we refer to then as those Ten Commandments really was an important part of the Mosaic Covenant. You know, what you hear about is Mosaic Covenant. That's the Old Testament, the Old Covenant. So what we went through is literally that. We have the Old Testament and the New Testament. That really is the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. We're under the New Covenant. But in Jeremiah 31, where the New Covenant is shared, does anybody remember what the New Covenant states? No longer will they be... Well, I'll forgive the transgressions, but you'll no longer be under the law, but I will place the law in their hearts and in their minds. And so it's important for us as we go through these, because we're going to talk about regulations in just a moment. I'm not under them. I'm not under the law. I was just talking to Shannon yesterday about another man who's a Seventh-day Adventist. And, you know, so we talked a little more about it, and he, you know, was trying to understand. And I told him, I said, you know, you really just need to read Acts chapter 15. You need to read the book of Colossians and the book of Galatians, and it settles it. It's a done deal. As Gentiles, we are not under the law. The apostles had the great opportunity to place us as Gentiles in the church as a whole under the law. But they said that we were no longer under the law. However, the law still is what? Important. Because we're not under it, but it's placed in our hearts and our mind. And Jesus said He didn't come to destroy the law. He came to fulfill the law. So the standards of God are important to us, and they need to be important to us. Now, I'm going to preface with saying I don't fully understand all the time everything God stated and why He stated it, other than I understand there were cultural bases for it back then, in that Jesus stated when He was asked about the why then did Moses give us the command that we could, you know, get a divorce, and He said it was because of the hardness of your heart. And so some of the regulations, some of the statutes, some of the rules, the laws that were given because of the hardness of the people's heart. And so God dealt with issues that they were going to do. And so as if you're going to do that, then do it what? Do it in a right manner. Does that make sense? Do it in a manner where you're loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, the first and greatest commandment, and that you are what? Loving your neighbor as yourself. Now, I say all that to say, because the first one we're going to get into is going to be one of those topics where we sit there and scratch our heads and say, how could this ever even be in God's Word? Now, Exodus 21, verse 1, we read that Yahweh, God, is now speaking to Moses, through Moses, and says, now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. And if you have the sermon note sheet, you see that I left on your sheet there, it's the word mishpat. And mishpat actually is from two other Hebrew words. In the Hebrew, they use just a letter as a prefix. And so, if I would put a bet in front of a word, it would mean toward. Okay? If I put the mem or a vav in front of a word, it could mean and. Okay? If I put the mem in front of the word, it means with, against, a lot of those different things. Okay? And so here, we put this, the mem, together with the Hebrew word shafat, which means to judge. And so it means with judging. Okay? And so in the book of Judges, many of the judges were not Dans, like Daniel, God is my judge, but there's the word shafat, which were the judges. Okay? They were the rulers, the ones who made decisions and determinations for the people, the assessors. Okay? That's our word. And so this word then, with God saying, I'm giving you these judgments, these are God's decisions, His assessments, His judgments, His decrees as the eternal, all-knowing, all-wise, all-powerful judge. And the reality is that I got to remember as I read through this that one day, every knee, how many knees? Every knee will bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Yahweh. They will declare that He is Lord. They will give it the understanding that God is God. Now, some are going to get thrown into hell and they're going to be still gnashing teeth at Him. But they're going to understand that He's what? He's God. And He is the judge. We read about two judgment thrones in the New Testament. Now, that sounds like Old Testament. But there are two judgments, seats of judgment, in the New Testament. We all know about the great white throne judgment, Revelation chapter 20, right? The dead, small and great, the rich, the poor, the good, the ugly, you know, the good, the bad, the pretty, the ugly. They're all going to be raised up, and they're going to be brought before the great white throne judgment seat of God. But only those names who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life get to enter into the kingdom of God, or into heaven. And the remainder of them get thrown into the lake of fire. But there's one other judgment seat that we read about in the New Testament. Where is it? That's the great white throne, Revelation 20. The judgment seat of Christ. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. That's exactly right. We have the judgment seat, the bema seat of Christ. That we, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, we, when we're absent from the body, will be present with the Lord. But when we get there, we will give an account for what we have done in our bodies. What we have done while we've been in the tent on the earth. One day I'm going to be out of this tent. And yes, I don't have to fear whether I'm going to heaven or I'm going to hell. But I will give an account for what I've done on the earth. Who I have lived for. And so these judgments, these assessments, God's saying, these are my assessments. And for us as believers then, it's important for us to come back through this. And not that I have to necessarily live by the letter of the law, but I need to understand the spirit of the law. That's exactly right. And understand that as a follower of the God of the Scriptures, that God had a purpose, an eternal purpose, in this word. He wasn't coming just to make life miserable for the Israelites. Rather, when I read this, and then I read the book of Leviticus, I read a book of love. I read a father who is laying out some assessments, some balance, some fence posts, if you would, for his kids to stay in, because he knows what's going to happen in their future, and he knows what's good for them. You, as moms and dads, you know that. You do that for your kids. You know? Just recently, I'll pick on Anna. Usually Andrew gets the picking on, right? Anyways, Anna kind of did something. I can't remember exactly what happened. And, it was a soccer practice. She flipped in one of the camping chairs. She was sitting on the edge. I told her, you're gonna flip. You know, it's not going to be good. And so she flipped. And where you at? Anna, right? And it was a bad moment, wasn't it? Ouch! And I said to you what? That's why I said, don't sit on the edge of the chair. I mean, how many times have you not maybe said that as exact words, but you've said the almost exact same thing to your kids, right? That's why I said, don't do such and such. This is going to happen. Well, God's kind of putting that out ahead of time. He's putting out these boundary markers, okay? So we want to look at these boundary markers. And in the next chapter and a half, the way I've kind of, when I study, I study inductively. But when I teach, I teach deductively. Does that make sense? You study inductively because you're getting something from it, but when you're turning back and you're presenting it, you're presenting it deductively because you've already made up an outline. Okay? So as I went through this and I decided where things kind of, thought processes were kind of dividing into another thought process, I divided it here for a reason. And the reason is, for me, as I read through this next chapter and a half, what I see is a theme of personal responsibility. Okay? And so that's what I want to look at as we go through this. So, this first area is from verse 1 to 11 in chapter 21. And so, let's read verses 1 to 11 in Exodus 21. God again says through Moses, now these are the judgments, mishpat, which you shall set before them, that is the people. If you buy a Hebrew servant, understand that's important, if you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve for 6 years, and in the seventh he shall go out free and pay nothing. If he comes in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. But if the servant plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free, then his master shall bring him to the judges. He shall also bring him to the door or to the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. Now, if a man sells his daughter to be a female slave, she shall not go out as the male slaves do. If she does not please her master, who has betrothed her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He shall have no right to sell her to a foreign people, since he has dealt deceitfully with her. And if he has betrothed her to his son, he shall deal with her according to the custom. Again, it's the word mishpat, the judgment, according to the judgment or assessment of daughters. If he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, her marriage rights. And if he does not do these three for her, then she shall go out free without paying money. Now, I've got this as concerning responsibility involving slavery issues. That's pretty unique there, isn't it? Anyways, but what do we see as we go through these slavery issues? First of all, there is a personal responsibility, and I'm kind of reading into this for a moment, okay? The Hebrew servant, okay? What was the reason for a Hebrew becoming somebody else's servant? He got himself in debt. There is a responsibility for paying off your debt. There was no chapter 11 in the Bible. You didn't claim bankruptcy. Bankruptcy, when you claim bankruptcy, it was claiming what? Slavery. That's exact. Indentured servanthood. If you owed a debt you could not pay, you and your family became indentured servants. there is a part where when you become responsible for your actions, it will change the way you act. It'll change the way you think, but ultimately it'll change the way you act. If you know that you cannot fall back on bankruptcy court, then you'll what? You'll treat debt a little bit more carefully. Exactly right. Listen, I'm not preaching judgment on credit card companies, but they make money on you being in debt. That's how they make money. They're not there as your friends. You know, I love the billboard of these loan sharks, you know, who are all there for you. You have credit card trouble? We're here to help. Yeah, we're here to help. We'll consolidate all your debt into one larger payment with greater what? Interest. We want you to become our credit slave. Think about this. When you are in debt to Discover, MasterCard, Visa, you have become an indentured servant to those credit card companies. It may be a little bit different, but they what? They own you. They own you. You get into things that you don't own. And, you know, even in the fact of just your job site, I was talking to somebody this week who has a decent job. It appears to be a decent job, but he has to work this weekend. Why? Because he's got things due on Monday. And whether he's working this weekend or not, guess what? He's working this weekend. And he's a salary kind of guy, which means what? He's not getting paid. Do you know what he is? He's a slave. He's an indentured servant. That's right. Whether you like it or not, even in the United States, when you work for somebody, you are an indentured servant. I'm looking at Charles and Jeremy. Jeremy, you're here because of your choice, right? You just wanted to come to Augusta to visit us. I mean, I know that it was... But it wasn't not necessarily your choice. It wasn't your choice. That's right. Your uncle said he wanted you to come, right? Yeah. Uncle Sam said, I want you to go to Augusta for at least 3 weeks. Charles, I know that you wanted to take those vacation trips to Afghanistan and Iraq and all those other places, didn't you? I mean, they were on the top of the list of things, you know, years ago you just wanted to go see and do.
I like dirt and rocks.
I like dirt and rocks. That's exactly right. Well, you know what? We don't think about that. And so, kind of, when we start to think about these things, kind of bring our concepts and take them back that way, okay? Anyways, so, personal responsibility. Now, so here's the deal. If I know these things, all right, and if I place myself in debt, whose fault is it that I become an indentured servant? Mine. Do you get it? It's my fault. And if it's a significant turn of events that have happened agriculturally, and I'm a farmer, whose fault do we want to say it is? God's. Yeah, we want to say it's government's. But no, back then, God's fault. But when did the negative things happen, the famines and stuff happen in Israel? When they turned away from God. So again, personal responsibility. Whose fault ultimately was it? The people. Do you get it? So many times we want to blame other people for the bad things that happened to us, or we want to blame God for the bad things that happened to us. But more often than not, it's what? It's my fault. One of the first things in the knighthood thing that I want my boys to learn is to accept responsibility. Accept responsibility. Now, I'm not saying I'm okay with you going out and making bolos all the time, but the fact is in life, you are going to make what? Mistakes. When you make the mistake, what? Own up to it. And if it costs you money, pay for it. I did a job recently that I literally donated to the job. A lot of money. Lots of money. I paid out labor and I bought supplies. And in the end, what the customer paid me wasn't even enough. Nowhere close to being enough to what I paid out in labor and supplies. But that was my what? My responsibility. I wanted to shirk that responsibility pretty good. But you know what? God's provided, even in the midst of all that. I don't know how. Again, I'm a math major, but sometimes when I look at the bank account, it just doesn't make sense. But I really believe God rewards you when you accept responsibility. But take this, read this further into here. Look else what it says then. If then, when you go in as an indentured servant, you go in with your wife and your kids, when you come out, what do you get? Your wife and your kids. But if you go in by yourself, when you come out, what do you get? Yourself. If your master gives you a wife, and from her you have children, when you leave, what do you go out with? Yourself. That seems kind of harsh, doesn't it? But again, personal responsibility. You knew the what? You knew the rules before you ever played the game. So if you go in and you take a wife and you got kids, what do you expect to happen 5 years from now? You're going to have to make a hard choice. You're either going to leave your wife or your kids, or you're going to choose to what? Stay. You say, well, this master isn't a good master. It doesn't matter. You still made a what? Choice. If you knew he wasn't a good master, then you certainly shouldn't have made the decision to fall in love or have kids. Does that make sense? That sounds harsh sometimes, but the fact is the facts. And we make decisions. And there's a lot of people who got married, not necessarily that they were planning to marry that individual, before that moment. They accept the responsibility, and that's a good thing. But you got to think of those decisions before you ever decide to do other things. Personal responsibility. It goes on, and it talks about if a man sells his daughter. Now, we're talking about what kind of daughter? Well, unmarried, yes, but a Hebrew. An unmarried Hebrew daughter. Not necessarily of age. Not necessarily of age. We think of age, but honestly, no. She could have been below 13 and I sold her. I could sell Anna off if I'm back in that culture. And what that man does with her is her choice, his choice. But note what it says, though. God still comes to her defense, okay? Because she's reaping the results of what? My bad decisions. Now, honestly, the other side is, I think I would stand before God and give what? An account to him for bad decisions I made, and then forcing those decisions upon who? My kids. Do you understand? I mean, I think, you know, I know that. I take responsibility, for example, the previous church in the split and stuff like that. I understand that other people made some decisions, but I understand I was ultimately the head pastor. And ultimately, I made decisions that led us to that split. And I take full responsibility. And I stood before the congregation, and I took full responsibility for it. Now, honestly, within myself, I felt like other people should have stood up and taken some responsibility, too. They didn't. But it didn't matter. And even though in my heart I was struggling and fighting with God about it, when the buck stops where? At my desk. That's exactly, or actually at my feet. And that's exactly right. And so ultimately it was my responsibility. And I know that when I stand before the Lord, I still give an account. Not, I understand his love and his grace and his mercy. But I understand that even in the end, that's not taken away from me. It's still ultimately what? There's consequences. And so there were consequences. Maybe the last 10 years have been consequences. God's been using them in my life. You know, that's why I tell people, you know, I understand the judgment of God, and I'm okay with that. God is the author of great symphonies, and he can take what seems to be pain and also use it for joyous consequences. And that's okay. Well, the fact is then, if I sell off my daughter, there are consequences to my daughter. There's consequences to me. There are consequences to my daughter. My family has lived that consequences of my decisions 10 years ago. Does that make sense? 20 years ago, 15 years ago. And dads, your families do too. And you have to be willing to what? Accept responsibility. Take ownership. That's exactly right. It is not part of our culture. Our culture is to shirk responsibility. It's always somebody else's fault. I was just reprimanding people for that this morning. So-and-so. I hate hearing so-so when I talk to my kids. I don't want to hear about what somebody else did. What I want to hear is, what did you do? I'm not asking what everybody else did. What I'm asking is, what did you do? That's what God wants to know. Will I take ownership for what I have done? 1 John 1:9 says, if you confess your brother's sin, it doesn't say that, does it? If you confess your wife's sin, if you confess your husband's sin, no. If you confess your sin, then God is faithful and just to forgive you of your sin. Personal responsibility in these slavery issues. There's a personal responsibility then as well to the owner of that slave when it comes to this woman as well, didn't it? Doesn't it? Look at it. If he chooses to take her, and he hasn't really assessed the issue properly, you know, so we won't go why he might have made those decisions, but he decides to take her as a wife, right? And then all of a sudden she doesn't please him, and he wants to dump her. God says what? You can't do that. You've got to what? You've got to provide for her. You've got to give her food, clothing, and marriage rights. 1 Corinthians 7 talks about that very clearly as well. Marcia owns my body. This belongs to her. And that belongs to me. If you're married, your body belongs to your spouse. And to withhold marriage rights, obligations, 1 Corinthians 7 is very clear. If you have any doubts what it is, go read it. When you withhold, then you're sinning against God. If your spouse has a need, a desire, then it's... Now, as a spouse, if you don't really have the need at that point and you know that your spouse is not feeling good or whatever, then that's what? You're not loving your neighbor as yourself. Okay? But anyways, let's move on. I'm feeling like you right here, Charles. I've got my notes all mixed together. Somebody came into my Bible and flipped them together on me. Anyways, all right. Then we move on into chapter 21, verse 12. Okay? This is again reading from 12 down to 27. He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. However, if he did not lie in wait, but God delivered him into his hand, then I shall appoint for you a place where he may flee. But if a man acts with premeditation against his neighbor to kill him by treachery, you shall take him from my altar that he may die. And he who strikes his father and his mother... You kids listen to this? Okay, sorry. He who strikes his father and his mother shall surely be put to death. He who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. And he who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. If men contend with each other, and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, and he does not die, but is confined to his bed, if he rises again and walks about outside with his staff, then he who struck him shall be acquitted. He shall only pay for the loss of his time and shall provide for him to be thoroughly healed. And if a man beats his male or female servant with a rod so that he dies under his hand, he shall surely be punished. Notwithstanding, if he remains alive a day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his property. If men fight and hurt a woman with a child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet no harm follows, he shall surely be punished according as the woman's husband imposes on him, and he shall pay as the judges, Shaphat, determine. But if any harm follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. If a man strikes the eye of his male or female servant and destroys it, he shall let him go free for the sake of his eye. And if he knocks out the tooth of his male or female servant, he shall let him go free for the sake of his tooth. Now, the first thing, this is, again, concerning responsibility involving manslaughter issues. I say manslaughter again because that was the term used for murder. Okay, this is not killing issues. This is manslaughter issues. This is killing a man. Okay, so we're not talking about killing a dog or a cat or a squirrel here. We're talking about killing another person. And right off the bat, God's assessment, God's judgment, God's determination is that he defines it based upon what? Motive or intent. That's exactly right. Was there an intent to do harm? If you sought to harm the individual, then you are guilty of murder. If your motive was not to harm, if it was purely an accident, then it was involuntary manslaughter, using our terminology today. You're riding down the road, somebody pulls out in front of you, and they're killed. It's involuntary manslaughter. It's not murder. But I saw you riding down the road, and I decided you're riding your bike, and I wanted to hit you because I hate bikers on the road. And I sideswipe you, and you fly off the road, headlong into a tree, and you die. That is no longer involuntary. I didn't mean to kill him. How many times have you heard that? I didn't mean to hurt him. Did you throw the rock at his head? Yeah. Then guess what? You're guilty of murder. It's all about the intent. And if you had aggression in your heart and somebody dies, we'll use this one here because we're talking about it, then you are guilty of murder and the punishment is death. If you didn't mean to, God said he would establish a city. We know those as the cities of refuge that you could flee to. Now note, though, that even in that light, there still was a what? A kinsman redeemer. There's still a responsibility for your action. You're swinging the axe, and the axe head comes off and splits the guy down the middle. You didn't mean to kill him. It was purely a what? An accident. But as I teach my kids, one of the missing terms of today, along with the responsibility thing, is the term, no, we'll get there, negligence. Everything's an accident. But in the military, you guys, if you've been there, you understand there's a term, negligence. Dereliction of duty. Negligence is not doing something that I should have done to protect. Now, we've gone overboard with OSHA regulations. But as I shared with somebody yesterday, the government has to come in when people refuse to govern themselves. That's exactly right. When people refuse to do what's right and govern themselves, the government has to come in and do what's right for us. If I am wielding my axe this way, and I've got a metal head on that thing, which is subject to fail, what do I need to make sure that I'm doing? Make sure that, yeah, that the downrange, if we're using the idea of a gun, is clear. I mean, when we are handling guns at our house, they are not ever, ever to be loaded. Period. I don't even want a, help me out. Magazine, thank you. In. There's no doubt. There's nothing. It frustrates me. It's happened once. We had long conversations about even a magazine being in the rifle, but it's not chambered. I don't care. I 100% do not care. It's a safety issue. It's not guns that kill. It's people's stupidity using guns that kill. Again, it's a personal responsibility issue. we are all what? Victims. We don't want to have any personal responsibility. So therefore, it's the gun's fault that somebody died. It's not the person's fault who was holding the gun, who pulled the trigger while there was a bullet in it. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me. It's negligence. It's negligence. Take responsibility for your actions. And that's what God is saying over and over and over again here. Someone who kidnaps somebody and tries to sell them, he deserves to die. Now, I'm not saying we got to apply all these laws, but could you imagine, again, we talked about this in the past, if all these laws were really held, it would really eliminate a lot of the crime that goes on. You didn't want to get rid of gun control, but it's already proven that where there is greater gun ownership, there is less crime. Manslaughter issues. Well, we again talk about slavery. And again, it's one of those issues that I don't understand. Because I'm against slavery, but slavery's in here. And I think what God's saying, though, is that there is, within that realm, there is some things to think about. If somebody's a slave, whether we like it or not, he is somebody's what? Property. So if somebody, in a fit of rage, kills one of his slaves, he deserves to die. Why? He's a manslayer, and it goes back to that intent. It goes back to the heart. But if he was beating him, which he is allowed to do, and he beats him too much, and the guy doesn't necessarily die, but he hangs on for a couple of days and then he dies, then he's not guilty. That's the part that I struggle with in the law. Okay, I think if he did it, he did it. But God knows, and that's where I have to what? Trust God on it. There's a reason for it. Okay, and so within some of these realms, it's kind of like when I go and I have assessments. Romans 13 says that I should submit unto the what? Governing authorities, right? For there is no authority what? Except as those who are ordained by God. I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt that President Obama is the president of the land because God set him up. Now, I think God gave us what we deserve. And I don't mean that to be rude. I want to respect the office. But very clearly, President Obama is not making decisions that are honoring to my God. And God allowed the children of Israel, northern, southern, to have kings that were according to their desires. And they reaped the consequences of their kings. We're reaping the consequences of our kings. In all of the world, think about this. We stand the most condemned. We are Caesar. We choose who is to be the servant of our land. We can't blame the government because we, the people, choose the government. We choose our representatives. And when they make decisions that are ungodly, who ultimately is to blame? We, the people. I'm so tired of hearing people blame Democrats and people blame other people. We, when my people, who are called by my name, when they will humble themselves, when they will confess their wicked ways, when they will pray and forsake them, then I will what? Hear. I will hear, and then I will heal. But too many who are called by his name want to do the American thing and point fingers and pass the buck. We ourselves are not willing to accept responsibilities for our own sinfulness and our own conformity to the world. We've got to start at ground zero with ourselves, understanding and taking responsibility for our own actions. Are there times when you are this manslayer? Remember, we went through this thou shalt not murder stuff. And Jesus said, if you what? If you call your brother Racha, an idiot, empty-headed, a fool, you just committed murder. The intent in your heart was to do harm to the other person. Premeditated. Do you get it? So I deal with my kids. Look, you have to learn to will obey by the time you're 12, or I will not give you a gun. If I cannot trust you to control your anger now, I will not give you a gun and set you up across the path from me. I am not stupid. You have to prove to me that you have self-control and you have the will to obey. And then you will get the gun. Otherwise, you can wait till you're 18, 21, or whatever age it's going to be, wherever you're at, and you buy yourself a gun. But not under my watch. Chapter 21, beginning verse 28. We see that concerning responsibility involving your animals. If an ox scores a man or a woman to death, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten. But the owner of the ox shall be acquitted. But if the ox tended to thrust with its horns in time past, and it has been made known to its owner, and he has not kept it confined, so that it has killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. If there is imposed on him a sum of money, then he shall pay to redeem his life. Whatever is imposed on him, whether it has gored a son or gored a daughter, according to this judgment, mishpat, it shall be done to him. If the ox gores a male or female servant, he shall give to their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. If a man opens a pit, or if a man digs a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls into it, the owner of the pit shall make it good. He shall give money to their owner, but the dead animal shall be his. If the one man's ox hurts another so that it dies, then he shall sell the live ox and divide the money from it, and the dead ox they shall also divide. Or if it was known that the ox tended to thrust in time past, and its owner has not kept it confined, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead animal shall be his own. Folks, if your dog jumps into my yard and I kill it, it's not my fault. It's your fault. I am so tired of our culture trying to put the blame on other people. I mean, there are people who are being taken to court because they kill an animal on their own property. If it's your property, and my dog comes onto your property, whose fault is it? It's my fault. I should have kept my dog what? Confined. Now, love your neighbor as yourself. If my dog is a friendly dog and is not causing you any problems, what should you do? Return it. Hold on to it. Call me up. Say, Bob, your dog's in my yard. Okay? And we've done that numerous times. We have Roxy, who lives around the corner. We're on a first-name basis with Roxy. Roxy likes my house. And so when Roxy's out, you know, we haven't seen her actually for a while. I wonder if they moved. Anyways, Roxy would come to my house all the time. Come here, Roxy. Hey, baby, come on. And then we'd drag her, you know, to her house. She was all fun and play until we realized she was getting down to the corner and we were taking her back to the house again. You know, man, these guys, you'd think she'd find another house to go to since we kept taking her back. I mean, we found out where they lived. That made it easier waiting than, you know, tying her up and waiting for the owners to come looking for her. We just knew where she was and took her back. But now, if Roxy, I promise you this, if Roxy came into my yard and attacked one of my kids, I promise you, you'd be reading about me in a paper. And I'd kill that dog. Because that person wasn't confining their violent pet. Now, if I then am riding down the road and I see your dog in the street, what should I do? I should seek to avoid it. I should seek to avoid it. And not what? Hit 80. You know, let's see what I can wipe it out. You laugh, but come on, how many? Anyways, we won't talk about squirrels. So, say again. If you know it's your neighbor's dog, you should take it back to your neighbor. That's exactly right. And so it's again, the second greatest commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. You know, that's the big deal. So, but now, here's what I'm bringing it with here, though. If for some reason I what? I hit it. I accidentally hit it. Now we got into a debate, don't we? The debate of what? Responsibility. Where should your dog have been? Under your control on your property. It shouldn't have been out in the road. But if I saw it in the road, and this is where the intent comes, this is why God always goes back to intent. If it was sitting in the road and you knew it was there, you should have at least what? Slow down to avoid it. But if I'm riding down the road, I don't remember who it was. Oh, it was Gerald. Gerald was with me. And we were coming through the neighborhood between Old Petersburg and Commercial Boulevard, you know, how you cut through that neighborhood. And I came around that neighborhood, and out comes this Basset Hound. A Basset Hound. He was laughing. Gerald was just having like a fog over this thing. This little-legged dog trying to chase down my van. He got pretty close because we're coming around the bend, and he cut the corner on me, you know. Now, he never came into the road. But what if he had, and he got tangled up in my... Well, it's not my fault. Does that make sense? I couldn't have stopped. I mean, I slowed down, but at that point, if he comes in and he comes at me, it's your responsibility. It's all a matter of the intent. Okay? I don't want to kill these things too much. But what I do want to talk about at the end here, and I missed this back in 2. Sorry. I missed this in 2, under 2. The talk about the eye for eye, tooth for tooth stuff. Because it goes back to what Jesus said. And it goes along with this. You've heard it said, Jesus said, you've heard it said, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. But I say unto you what? Love your enemies and pray for those who despitefully use you. So in all these things, one of the things I want to bring out here, in all these things as well, is that we have to remember not just loving your neighbor. So it's loving God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. Loving my neighbor as myself, but Jesus intensified that and said that if you would, the third great commandment, which we don't really state it that way, is what?
Love your enemies.
Love your enemies and pray for those who despitefully use you. It's all about what? Love and the consideration of others. Okay? Let's go to the fourth one. Okay? The last one here. Beginning in Exodus 22, verse 1. This is concerning another person's property. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. If the thief is found breaking in and he is struck so that he dies, there shall be no guilt for his bloodshed. If the sun has risen on him, there shall be guilt for his bloodshed. He should make full restitution. If he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. If the theft is certainly found, alive in his hand, whether it is an ox, donkey, or sheep, he shall restore double. If a man causes a field or a vineyard to be grazed and lets loose his animal and feeds it, and it feeds in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. If a fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that stacked grain, standing grain, or field is consumed, he who kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. Finally, if a man delivers to his neighbor money or articles to keep and it is stolen out of the man's house, if the thief is found, he shall pay double. If the thief is not found, then the master of the house shall be brought to the judges to see whether he has put his hand into his neighbor's goods. For any kind of trespass, whether it concerns an ox or donkey, a sheep, clothing, or for any kind of lost thing which another person claims to be his, the cause of both parties shall come before the judges, and whomever the judges condemn shall pay double to his neighbor. If a man delivers to his neighbor a donkey, an ox, a sheep, or any animal to keep, and it dies, is hurt or driven away, no one seeing it, then an oath of Yahweh shall be between both of them, that he has not put his hand into his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept that, and he shall make it good. But if, in fact, it is stolen from him, he shall make restitution to the owner of it. If it is torn to pieces by a beast, then he shall bring it as evidence, and he shall not make good what was torn. If a man borrows anything from his neighbor, and it comes injured or dies, the owner of it not being with it, he shall surely make it good. If its owner was with it, he shall not make it good. It was hired. It came for his hire. All right. What's the deal here? First of all, regarding the other person's property, is thievery. stealing. Very clearly, if you break into somebody's house and they shoot you, what? It's your fault. You shouldn't have broke in. Okay? That's at nighttime. If it's daytime, basically what it's saying is you can shoot to what? To wound. Okay? You don't have to necessarily kill them. Okay? You didn't have to kill them. At nighttime, it's dark. You're defending yourself. It doesn't matter. Daytime, you should shoot to maim, to wound, whatever. Okay? They're in your place. Okay? But if a person steals it, now we get into that. We're going to deal with the concept here, Don, and that's the concept of restitution. Note the restitution. Again, could you imagine if our culture today, we brought in the concept of restitution? And somebody, go back to chapter 21, verse 2, right? If someone then couldn't what? Make the payment, which more than likely they what? They couldn't. They would become what? Slaves. Because they thieved. I think of the book Les Misérables. And Jean Valjean became a prisoner, a slave, if you would, because of a loaf of bread. And he had to do so many years in prison because he stole a loaf of bread. Well, you take just a simple loaf of bread. Today, that costs what? $3? Depends on what kind of loaf. I mean, you could buy the cardboard bread. I'm good with it. You know, Dollar, Kroger, or whatever. But anyways, more than likely, let's pick on the $3 loaf, okay, from the bakery. $3. But you didn't have enough to pay for it. So you stole it. You now owe what?
Two loaves of bread.
Two loaves? No. You steal it. And you slaughter it. So this all assumes whether you've eaten it or not, okay? You'd owe 5 loaves. But if it's found in your possession, then you owe 2 loaves, okay? And so the reality is that you owe at least 2 loaves or $6. And now you have to what? Sell yourself to pay off $6. Now, that doesn't sound like a big deal. But people who usually thieve aren't usually thieving for $3, are they? And so now all of a sudden they become an indentured servant for a couple years. And again, we go back here, usually that responsibility is going to affect who? Your family. Your immediate family. It's a sad thing. But you know what? These things work. Note then, again, the personal responsibility. If your animal gets loose and it starts eating out of my garden, what do you need to do? You're going to pay them on tomatoes. At least train your animal to eat my green beans. It gets rid of the green beans and I make money off it. I like it. I mean, it's a good deal. I might even train your animal to come into my life. Anyways. But the point is that it's your responsibility again, right? If you set a forest fire, Canada's got this one down. United States, not so much. If you set a forest fire, who's responsible to pay for all the equipment to come in and put out the fire? You should be. There was a young man years ago now. If you go to Canada with me, we can show you the island. It still has scars from this. An island was burnt down. They would do solos with the teens. And so they would send them off. They'd have their couple hours of solo time. And the young man lit a fire. And then he put it out, or he thought he did. For all intents and purposes, he thought it was out. But it was still smoldering in all the understuff, you know, the mulch that's down there. And so a few hours later, there was billowing smoke coming from the upriver, because the base lodge is about 2 miles from that area. There's billowing smoke coming. Anyways, they had to bring helicopters in. The scoop water, where we go, it's pristine, Canada. I mean, it's not like there's a hydrant on every island or at every cabin. They had to bring helicopters in, scoop water, and put out this fire. And it was very dry. If this had happened 24 hours later, the kid would have been in jail. Because that night at midnight, the fire ban went on. Okay, so we always check when we go up whether there's a fire ban on or not. Anyways, he had to come back up. His parents, he was from the United States, He had to be brought back up for court, and his parents had to pay for the use of the helicopter for thousands. We're talking about $20,000-$40,000 that they paid for this. Oops. Again, could you imagine in our land if we started making people repay? I've shared this before, you know, like with the lawsuits. Could you imagine if when the lady sued McDonald's for $1 million for spilling her own coffee on her own lap while she was driving? I promise you, the clerk from McDonald's was not in the car tipping that coffee on her. And yet she what? She won. How stupid is that? Whose responsibility was it to take a hot cup of coffee and not keep it in the spot it's supposed to be in while she was driving? Hers. Whose responsibility was it to take a drink while she was driving? Hers. Dumb. Anyways, could you imagine, though, if we said, okay, if you lose, you owe the other person that you're trying to get the $1 million from $1 million. That'd stop a whole lot of these suits, wouldn't it? Sure would. Well, okay, yes. But she shouldn't even got caught for the medical costs because it was her fault, her responsibility. I mean, I'm hard when it comes to this stuff, but it's justice. Justice. We always claim fairness, but fairness is what?
The enemy of justice.
It is the enemy of justice. It's what's right from my perspective. Well, this last section here from 7 to 15 talks about lending out or borrowing equipment. It's one of the reasons I hate borrowing equipment. I don't mind lending it out. I hate borrowing it. It never fails when I borrow it that it what?
Breaks
on my watch. And, you know, I'm on different boards, and one of the things, one of the association types things I'm on the board of had an activity recently, and potentially some of the property of the place we were using was damaged. There was a debate on whether it was kept up in good condition or not. But you know what? It's now that place has chosen to make a deal of the condition of the equipment. And so what are we going to do? What is our decision as a board? We're a Christian organization. We're going to take responsibility. If they believe that it was on our watch, then what? It's on our watch, and we'll pay for the new equipment, okay? That's a rough deal, you know, because nobody what? Took pictures ahead of time. No one knew that they were going to have to worry about that, okay? Live and learn. I remember borrowing my next-door neighbor's chainsaw, and when he got it back, the blade was bent. I honestly don't remember ever being pinched. But it was on my watch. Does that make sense? So I've become a big, I don't borrow tools. Especially as a business, I rent tools. If I rent and I buy the insurance, then I don't have to worry about it. It just happens. I'm willing to lend you my tools. I've lent some of you my tools, and take care of them, please. But again, ultimately they belong to God. So God can take care of his own tools. And I'm good with that. But from my perspective, that again, that personal responsibility that's there, I just won't do it because it's going to break on my watch, and then I'm going to be what? Buying you a new tool, whereas I could have just what? Or rented it or bought it myself. Anyways, I'm very selfish that way. Anyways, and so a lot of times it's easier just to buy the tool or rent the tool. But that's what this end section says. If you've taken it, if you've borrowed it, and then it was stolen while you had it, you need to be able to prove what? It was stolen. You can claim it was stolen, but it's going to go to what? It's going to go to court. Sounds like us today, doesn't it? Neighbor takes neighbor to court. And you got to present your case. And they got to present their case. And then ultimately, again, Romans 13, you have to do what? Submit to the governing authorities. The governing authorities are going to make a governance, a decision, and it's going to decide what you do. So, exciting passage here. I hope that you weren't overly concerned with the influx of my voice getting very excited in different parts here. Anyways, not one of these passionate messages, huh? Anyways, but the questions at the end are very valid for me, and I think to you as well. How difficult is taking responsibility to you? God makes a lot of pain, if you would, in His Word to bring out the concept of personal responsibility. And it is a very difficult thing to do. And the question is, how difficult is it for you? What is your cost threshold? I.e., at what level are you willing to take cost? Oh, there's only a penny? Oh, yes, my bad. Here, here's a penny. It's a buck. Oh, no problem. It's my fault. $1,000. Well, no, Jeremy. It's Jeremy. He's new. He can blame everything on Jeremy. He's leaving 3 weeks anyway. Jeremy's fault. Isn't it amazing? I mean, think about it. We laugh at our kids. We look at our kids. But we're big kids sometimes. And the bigger you get, the bigger the what? The threshold, you know, that starts to happen. Remember, Book of Proverbs 22, verse 1 says, a good name is rather to be had than much silver and gold, than great riches. So finally, be careful of the commitments that you make. Why? Because they become your responsibilities. If you commit yourself to something, whether it's a wife and kids, whether it's your property or somebody else's property, whether it's slaves that you own, now I know we don't do that, but you may have a business, and therefore you get what? Indentured servants, whether you want to call them that or not. They become your responsibility. And I didn't deal with this. None of you necessarily have a business, I don't think. Well, that's true, Gabrielle. Oh, so it's, I'm teaching my daughter. Anyways, but some of you might, and you may in the future, remember that. I mean, I know that. Again, going back to that one job. It had been very easy for me to tell somebody, sorry, I lost money on this job, therefore what? I can't pay you. But when I bring somebody on as my indentured servant, they become my what? My responsibility. And so be careful of the commitments that you make. Now, I'm not saying don't ever make any commitments. Reject passivity. But accept responsibility. Let's pray. Father, thank you for your love. I thank you for your word. It's true, it's quick, it's powerful, and it's sharper than a two-edged sword. And Lord, there are so many things in your word that we just would rather ignore. We really don't want to try to understand it or deal with it. We'd rather just claim it as under the old law and not part of our Christian liberty. And yet, Lord, you have standards out there for how we should treat one another. You have standards for how we should look at our friends and even those that we would consider our enemies. And you've told us to treat them with love, to love them as we would want someone else to love us if we were in the same situation reversed. Lord, I ultimately think of how you have loved me when I was your enemy, and how I was at enmity with you, and you sent Jesus to die for me. You didn't need to do that. You paid the penalty that I owed so that I didn't have to become that indentured servant all of my life. You gave me liberty and freedom, the year of Jubilee in Christ, that I may glorify you. Lord, I pray that we would live as walking testimonies of your standards. We would live by them, and we would practice them, and we would encourage others in the same. For we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.